Welcome back. You are with RCR Talk here with Marie, and joining me now, my brother from another mother, my good old buddy, Mr. Eminem, Slim Shady of the Papadopoulos, Martin Gibson here for Meaty Matters. How are you?
Good. I'm good, thanks, Marie.
I'm good.
I'm actually good too. I've had a better week than you, I think it's fair to say.
Yes. Not the greatest
half week. Half empty nest syndrome. Your cat died. I don't know if we want to talk about that, but...
Because I don't want to cry for everyone. The makeup has had to be quite heavy the last couple of days, but it's all right. We're here now, and I tell you what is worth crying over was the woeful state of what was in the local media across this week. You and I were sending texts backwards and forwards, and you kept saying, "Busky, I'm struggling to find anything, and it's been a bit of a battle." And
it'll be easier to eat this newspaper than to try and get some meaning out of it.
Far. I mean, I know we joke about grist in the mill and high fiber diets or what have you, but I think they took this to a whole new level. This was laxative warp factor 10 this week.
Yeah, and it's probably worth being realistic. It's in no small part because we've got access to X and that's so lively that the contrast becomes more and more glaring, doesn't it? When you know a fair bit about what the talking head on the news is saying, because you've seen it from all, you've basically curated a variety of opinions, which is what the media should be doing, but they're not. And then you're watching what they're doing and you're just thinking, man, you're not just incompetent. You're willfully trying to deceive and bore me to death.
Oh, honestly, I flicked this to you because you said that comment and I thought, oh, okay, I'll have a quick look. And usually, I mean, the Herald is my go-to, but I thought, oh, well, look, I'll be fair and I'll jump over, look at the Herald. And it was like, ooh, okay, he's right. Let's jump over to Stuff. And I took the screenshot and sent it to you because this was on their front pages. This was moving down. So when you jump onto Stuff, this is like their leading news that they want you to see. And I'm going to hold this up for everyone to see. So there it is there. And it is doctor degree in operating room photos, how this fake Sydney surgeon wooed women. The next story was opinion, banned for a crop top, airline dress codes have double standards, followed by watch as Indian police bust Ed Sheeran for busking. That's the breaking news from Stuff. And they wonder why they have a financial crisis, Martin.
Yeah.
And it was not much better, to be fair, actually. Let's have a look at Nanny Herald, shall we? I haven't looked at Nanny Herald today. Let's have a look at Nanny Herald. Okay, let's go latest news. Oh, there we go. Right, latest news. That's the top story.
Netflix
has just 9 shows on its New Zealand menu. Government unveils new proposal to shake that up under premium, so you've got to pay extra for that. The next story is, when should kids stay home from school? Parents facing dilemmas on keeping children home for mental or physical health. Sand mining is absolutely unacceptable, Dr. Mary Kepa. Well, there you go. That's actually a proper news story. And two in a row. Watch live. Shane Jones makes fisheries announcement after catch limit review. This one. Now, I don't know about you. Have you noticed that cropping up like again and again? So it's obviously a fixed algorithm clickbait. It doesn't say sponsored. But if I see one more time on the hunt for the Duval founder's missing jewellery, I don't give a rat's about their missing jewellery. Why is that?
No, property developers or something when they went broke.
Yeah, they're basically rich twats from what I could see. But anyway, then there's a story on racing, a very sad story about a 44-year-old rally driver that passed away.
Did he pass away rallying or just...
It was not cited. No, it does not look like it was a rally accident. Cause of death was not noted. Given one here on natural burials, cardboard caskets and native trees. Here we go. Breaking news. This is the international breaking news, Marie. Are you ready? Lip reader claims Spain football boss asked permission to kiss the World Cup star. Tell you what. Anyway, and it gets worse from there.
Yeah, I mean, the things that I mean, you can really see the knives being sharpened for poor old Oinky,
Oh, yeah.
for Luxon, for Crescinda Lardern.
Do you think it's justified?
Yeah, he's got to go. I mean, you know, we've been ahead of the curve on this. We started out gently, didn't we? It's been one of the more consistent themes of media matters, and we started out saying, well, he needs to improve his sales ability. He's believing his own press about what a super genius business guy he is, because he made the C-suite. You know, he's got the corner office. He's wealthy. He's sorted. You never see him out of a suit or with stubble or anything. Rarely see his own personality behind his American psycho corporate mask. And you know, a point that frequently made is, if you've worked in sales where you really have to sell, you know you can't sell. And you know, making deals between companies isn't the same as getting someone to feel great about handing over 10 to 20% of their pay packet for the next 4 years or whatever it is. You know, I've made the point before, he's got many of the same characteristics as I had when I was just starting out in sales, worried about paying my rent and being able to afford pies and cigarettes on my break, and aware that the smell of urgent desperation about me could be, you know, picked up by people I was trying to sell stuff to. And you have that feeling in those moments, if I can just get them to like me, they'll buy off me. And it's not true. They might like you, but it's quite a separate thing. Later, I came to learn that you can be quite abrasive and arrogant, and in some ways, possibly unlikable. If people think that you have asked the right questions to get a firm understanding of what their issues are, and then taken the time to explain them the options that you have for solving their problems, and maybe given them some idea about, and maybe given them a choice between two of them, they'll buy off you. And all the handing out of brochures and, oh well, maybe they'll come back to me because they like me, it doesn't work.
No.
And I watch him fawning to journalists who just have got thinly disguised contempt for him. Jenny May.
Oh,
Just hates him.
and Jenna Lynch isn't much better.
Jenna Lynch hates him. And you know, I've said before, his biggest crime is that he doesn't give those two bottles of Chardonnay a night female journalists the tingles. If he
No,
did,
no.
it'd be a lot easier for him.
Well, it's
And
like that. Sorry.
he doesn't remind them of their own female friends that they go out for a bottle of Chardonnay with. You know, if he did either of those things, he'd have a much easier
Well,
path.
it's that whole he's got that case of head boy syndrome, where there are two types of head boy. You have the ones that were at school who had everything that he has. So they have, they're perfectly, dressed out in the uniform, the hair is ideal, everything is optically spot on. And then there is this invisible sort of mana about them in terms of their carriage, and they're able to almost invisibly bring everyone along with them.
They've got
He doesn't
mana.
have that. He
Now,
has none of that. There was that quote, I can't even remember who said it, but I heard it on Leighton Smith. They said in John Key, you had a hollow man, in Christopher Luxon, you have a vacuum. And I think the polls, the people are now seeing it, the polls are reflecting it. Frustrating thing for me, though, is that you still have a huge number of voters that sit in that middle block that would never consider anything outside of National or Labour. So they just flip-flop. between
Well, I have heard
one
Cam
alternative.
Slater describe Luxon as a John Key tribute band playing Jacinda Ardern's tunes, which I thought was good. Probably
Yep, that's.
stole it off someone.
But that's pretty bang on. So those, so what we're talking about now, there have been three recent polls. Two of the three polls are saying that the left bloc would actually have the ability to govern if we were to go to the polls today. Now, the problem with that, of course, is that like we're 3 years away, 2.5 years away from a campaign, 3 years away from voting. So, I mean, it's irrelevant. It's absolutely irrelevant. What that does signal, though, is that the National Party have a bit of a problem on their hands because they either need to say, you know, they need to work together to work on a Luxon's image, which I don't think they can do, or
No.
they need to consider, is he the man that's going to take us into the next election? And based on the polls and the direction of travel, the answer to that is strongly no.
That they bet that Kamala Harris was going to be the president now. So you've got a guy in there who's openly besmirched Donald Trump and who openly worships Obama, who was in charge during the Biden years anyway. So the bet on the wrong horse. So, possibly if we were looking at the horrendous scenario where we had President Kamala Harris, maybe they could redeem him. And I don't want to be too mean to Christopher Luxon. It's not him personally. It's that he's the wrong guy in that job. You've got to have either a white guy who Maori like or a Maori guy who white guys like in that job. And for me, you're looking at Shane Jones and Winston Peters there. And Winston, I'd rather see Winston mentoring Shane Jones to do it. And I'd like to understand that they're working where Shane Jones is mentoring young people to take over as well. I think that's, for my money anyway, that's the where this is heading.
So let's look at the media's reactions. So of course they love the polls. That's actually
Something
given them
tonight.
some that yeah, that's given them some really cheap, free and easy column inches. The sort of separation and they try to drive this sort of create this supposed wedge now between Christopher Luxon and David Seymour. And you did you see the Emerson cartoon like with Seymour driving this little Range Rover up Luxon's nose and all this sort of stuff and the calls for the
Emerson's
potential.
just ghastly. Such a good artist, but he's just.
And the calls to for Luxon to not have Seymour be Deputy Prime Minister. Now, you are they just dumb or are they just being obtuse? Because Christopher Luxon can't do anything about removing or firing or what have you David Seymour because David Seymour is the leader of his own separate political party. He is not a member of the National Party. I mean, they can work in cooperation together, and I'm sure that there have been discussions behind closed doors around the direction of travel. Luxon's been very open about how he is not fond of the Treaty Principles Bill. So the fact that they're saying this is, I mean, are they just trying to have public opinion not to have Seymour there? Or I don't get it, Marty. Explain it to me. Explain it to me
I
like
mean,
I'm Jenna
firstly,
Lynch sitting in the press gallery.
well, the numbers are there for them to make a case that they're not doing well. I mean, this is from Stuff on Wednesday. 16 months after Helen Clark took over as Prime Minister, her Labour Party was up 10 points since the 1999 election. At this point, during John Key's tenure as Prime Minister, his National Party was up 9 points. And in January 2019, Jacinda Ardern's Labour Party was also up 10 points following the 2017 election. Luxon's National Party is going the other way, and that is why this year's early polling has sparked so much chatter in the halls of power. We also had this from Thomas Coughlin. Voters' Valentine's message for Christopher Luxon, we're just not that into you. The message came in the form of two polls from Taxpayers Union Courier and One News Varian, which join a third of Talbot Mills corporate poll from earlier this year and showing a change of government. It's overeating the pudding a little bit there, Thomas, but it's clearly not good for the coalition and not good for the man who leads it, and it could be about to get worse. So it's not like they're totally pulling that out of the air, but yeah, 80% of them describe themselves at least as left-leaning, and a significant portion describe themselves as hard left. And if you, I mean, I increasingly watch One News or listen to national radio and think, where's the voice that represents over half of New Zealand in this publicly funded little pinko lovey hand-wringing fest?
Yes, we're
In
indeed.
terms of, yeah, they hate Seymour. Similar reasons to, you know, why they hate Luxon. He doesn't give them the tingles. But also, yeah, they're very left-leaning.
The other big difference between Seymour and Luxon too is I think Seymour loves the attention, and it doesn't matter if it's positive or negative. I mean, that whole Guy Williams trying to hijack the interview at Waitangi with David Seymour was classic case in point. I mean, Seymour was lapping that up, and he's in his element with that. He's sharp on his feet. He just loves it because for him, he's got whoever runs the social media on X and the newsletters and all the like. They do a great job because for him, that's just fodder. That's just shareable clickbait that he can get out there to actually prove his point, and he just keeps doing it. And I have to admit, he is Teflon when it comes to all of that. I
He's very, very quick on his feet. He's
very
very
quick on his feet.
articulate. He's d does his research. And I would say the same thing about Seymour as I say about Luxon. You need guys like that. They're great as an ingredient. In terms of running the show, he's just a little bit too much on the spectrum. Just the same way as Luxon's a little bit too focused on hopping from foot to foot about the wonderful job, big boys' jobs he's going to be able to get now he's got Prime Minister on a CV.
Well,
And
the
that's
other.
why he's courting BlackRock rather than doing other structural things that could improve New Zealand's ability to invest in itself.
So Luxon too, then, as you've mentioned before, he gets fixated,
Frustrated.
fixated on
Laser
things.
focused.
Yeah, and several of those things, and one of these, which is actually a topic at the moment, is of course this entire fluoride debate. Now, the fact that we had the change to the bill in 2021, which then took all this power back to the Director General of Health, Ashley Bloomfield, as he was getting whacked by the door on the way out, then of course made that announcement that all councils, the remaining councils who hadn't fluoridated their water, needed to do so, and of course open up the absolute uproar in those communities that didn't want it. It's centralizing democratic power away from the people. I mean, that's the entire point of local governance. And if you can't have local governments controlling their own infrastructure and resources, what's the point of having them, methinks?
Yeah, as if further evidence were needed that local government is essentially a fool's errand when it should be, there should be a process of devolution so there's more and more power concentrated in it and
So then,
capacity building so, you know, it's not just populated by.
idiots. Then, of course, the master of political timing himself, Winston, comes out with his bill in terms of returning that decision-making power back to the councils. I tell you what, it's amazing what sort of nearly what 50 years in politics will do. It allows you to have almost an ESP way of reading a room, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's something you've got, and it's not something you can learn. And I think again, probably Luxon did think, hey, you know, I've been very successful in the corporate arena actually, and I'll be honest with you, I think I can learn. Doesn't it give you the creeps? That's the other thing about it. The way he says, "I'll be honest with you," when someone says that to me, I think, well, isn't that your default setting? You make an exception. You'd normally look, I'd be lying my head off, but in this instance, I'll tell you the truth.
The other one he
You're
does
lying
is.
about that too.
Well, the other one he does now, I've realized in my lived experience. No, anyway.
Yeah.
So this will be interesting because, of course, the game is on. Whangarei, deeply Vince with a really wonderful last name has just popped out of my head. He's that well, Whangarei, there. You've got Rotorua. There's huge battles going on there. And Tauranga, I mean, what's
Yeah,
happening
it's a
there?
bit
Because
more inspiring, isn't it, than Mahi Drysdale? Well, yeah, we don't want to, but they might find us personally. It's like, oh man.
head boys making us do it. So
I'm
the
glad
director.
you're not my battalion commander in World War II, you lily-livered coward.
So the Director General of Health is now threatening to potentially do this and actually throw her weight around. If I were Winston Peters, I'd be sitting there going, "Bring it on."
Yeah, I mean, this is another recurrent theme on Media Matters. The time for just trust us, we're experts, is over. The time for take this medication, what are you, anti-science, over. I don't take health advice from people who think there are too many people on Earth. It's just an Occam's razor thing. I found it's worked so well. It's worked well so far.
I'm going to put a little plug in here also for RCR 360. Next week's episode is going to be dedicated to the fluoride debate, so don't miss that. Those drop at 8 o'clock on a Thursday. This week has been on the gene editing bill, but you'll get that later on tonight. But yeah, next week we're going to talk about this whole fluoride debate. And you're right, I've gotten to a point, Marty. I mean, just looking at the gene editing, fluoride's the same. The days of we can science ourselves out of every problem is just gone. You hit the nail on the head there.
And they may have heard me say it on the Foundation members chat we had on Sunday, but found RCR Foundation members, you are Elon Musk. Without you, this conversation's not happening in the cohesive, referenceable, shareable way that it is. So reference it and share it, and have a look at it. There's a great I think it's probably worth acknowledging that there was a fair bit of grumbling about RCR 2.0 as well on the on that chat, but we'll get there. And I think as we get better at sifting and categorizing some of the topics we're talking about, it'll get a lot easier to go to an area of interest and be able to look at a cohesive body of work and really become well informed about it in a way that would almost be impossible to do by yourself. So yeah, stick with us. Thanks for your support. Yeah, please do share that sort of material on fluoridation and on the other topics that there's so much material on, because it'll help New Zealand be better informed and hopefully make some better decisions about who to vote for.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, we've gone to this video format now, which means you get to see my mate, Hungus Bunk, there, as someone mentioned in one of the comments. And Marty gets to see me at least with makeup, lips, and hair done and not sitting here looking like a dishevelled mesh in my PJs, which is how it used to be often before. So, there has been improvements. There has been improvements. Before we dive off and head overseas, the fluoride, just going back to the fluoride debate. And one of the things, again, in Media Matters that we've talked about, and you have your Zipper consensus that you have talked about. One of the things that I do like about the fluoride debate is that it's actually one of those things that is actually a crossbench issue. So both the Greens and Labor have statements raising concerns about this and wanting to sort of enter into this conversation and, placing red flags there and being aware that of the importance of the overall debate, and especially to people having choice. Now, don't withstand the irony on that one, of course. However, that is there. They've got those policy statements out there. So that, in a way, is kind of good because it means that it's a debate that can bring people together. And when you can have a conversation on common ground, like you could on this one, it's amazing what else, as you say, Marty, with your Zipper consensus, it's amazing what else, what other common ground that you can find to bring conversations together. So be mindful of that if you're chatting to people out and about, that someone that may not agree with you on something, you could actually come together over this and have a
Well, with
really
the
good
fluoride
conversation
debate,
about it.
it's often as simple as saying, I agree, cavities in children's a major health issue, and ongoing lack of dental health has all sorts of horrible downstream effects on people's health. It can lead to heart problems. The bacteria goes in from the teeth and attacks the valves in the heart. There's many reasons that we should be concerned about dental health, whether mass medicating people with fluoride that is a byproduct of the fertilizer industry and coal-fired power plants is, that's a separate question. It's not, are we concerned about children's health? Won't someone think of the children? And in order to undo some of the social engineering, or more accurately, social demolition that we've seen, we need to make an effort to understand the perspective and speak to the perspective of people we might view as our opponents. I've been thinking about that a fair bit. I understand why radical Maori want to go their own way, want to step off the way society is presented to them. I do too. It's not because it's not Pākehā doing this to you. It's someone doing it to both of us and thinking that we're doing it to each other. I mean, the total treaty settlements are what, a 30th of what we have lined up to pay for climate this decade. And same, I understand why people on the left think there needs to be a tilting of the scales to help those left behind by neoconservative or neoliberal changes. I think they also need some of Brett Weinstein's consolation prizes for those left behind by capitalism. But I mean, my thing is, I just don't think fostering dependency on a public sector that's growing like a cancer is the answer. So that's the place to talk about it. And getting back to national, I understand why baby boomers on the National Party board want to punish gangs for the harm they do to our society. But I think it's a swing and miss focusing on what they wear, or even focusing on punishment for that matter. So yeah, it's something, and we want to avoid that mistake the left made of stigmatizing the people who have opposed the direction that we think we should travel in, that we're now traveling in more. I'm optimistic, but I think it's important that we take a moment to understand that even though they look shrill and hysterical on whatever social media we see them on, they don't represent most people. Those people saying ugly stuff, and we've still got to live with them.
We do. We do. Now, one of the things that we have been doing for people, and if you are signed up, or you could go to the new app and have a look at this, is the Daily Brief. And I think the Daily Brief is a fantastic product. It's essentially a 15-minute snapshot of what the news is for that day. So headlines are usually a piece of opinion from a host and sort of an overview of the best content that we have that all of us have been putting out an interview. Now, you got to have a little bite at the Daily Brief pie earlier this week, and I'm going to read you a paragraph that you put out, and it was talking about the USAID. I'm going to dive a little bit into this now and actually have a look at some of the comparisons. And you said here, what's not on the White House summary but is far more interesting is the funding of George Soros's organizations, which installs activist prosecutors or funds media outlets that aided the CIA in their color revolutions or deposed populist politicians. Billions have gone to those agenda-setting media outlets that shape most people's opinions. Politico, New York Times, BBC, just adding that in, outlets that set the agenda and provide so many primary source material for New Zealand's ailing and untrusted legacy media. And speaking of which, if you're drinking from the fire hydrant of alternative views, then coverage of the matter in the legacy media seems like a prostatic drip of rusty water laden with parasites. Martin.
It's a lot harder to write 3 minutes than it is to talk for an hour, as you
Yes,
well know.
as I well know. But, you know, this covers what we were just saying for how we opened. This is what we're finding that, and I had this when I read that and I heard it first, and I got you to send it to me so I could chew about it and think about it. Do you remember Peter Boghossian, and I think also too Gedser talks about it. He calls it a parasitic idea. Peter Boghossian talks about idea laundering. I think we've got a similar thing going on here with NZAID and the media. And this is what's been happening both in this country and abroad for years, where you have a government that has cooked up in some sort of think tank or a back room somewhere. They've got an idea or they have a goal. Okay, they have a goal. So I call it political influence laundering. They've got this goal that they want to set. They know that that's going to be highly unpalatable for the people.
Yeah, most
So
people don't want.
they don't want it, right? So then what they do in the United States' case is they, through USAID, they fund the media. Well, in this country, we had the Public Interest Journalism Fund and the disinformation projects, you know, potato, potato. So then you have them promulgate a story about whatever the idea may be, you know, te toi te reti or what have you. You create the outrage and the distrust and the division within the population. You get the discussion going. You get everybody all het up about it. Then the government rides on their political white horse to save the day. We have a solution to your problem, they say. And then all of a sudden it goes full circle and the government gets their desired effect. I mean, this ostensibly is let's find solutions for problems and
It's a
let the people.
Hegelian dialect of Marx, isn't
Exactly.
it?
Yeah, it is. And it's all, and this is what's going
Problem,
on.
reaction, solution.
Exactly. So it's happening in this country. USAID, well, gosh, they've made an absolute art form of this. And of course, the Doge have absolutely blown this out of the water. Well, for everyone except TV1.
Well, I mean, you can, So, say if you, I mean, when I see Jenny May just grilling Luxon with a, like, she's a real bottom teeth talker when she's angry, like her lips just, and then she's all smiles with Hipkins, and you think, why, how are you even pretending that you're representing public interest on a wide variety of issues when that's all you talk about, and in a really sort of combative way that's not about having a conversation, it's accusatory. But if you look at what the funding for the Public Interest Journalism Fund was, what people had to accept to receive it, they had to accept that New Zealand is a systemically racist country, that Māori never ceded sovereignty, and the racism in New Zealand systemically disadvantages Māori. So it makes perfect sense if you're saying, okay, I want you to behave as if all of that were true. It's congruent. And what's more, again, I don't mind her being on TV with those views. What I object to is that there's no countering views. That's the problem.
And then those countering views too, like when it came to the USAID. I mean, you shared a clip with me, and here they were essentially looking at US aid, and it was lots of pictures of starving children in Africa, and no one could get their TB shots, and the whole, you know, cue strings and violins over here. I'm amazed they didn't put the music over there, to be brutally honest with you. And how dare the Big Donald is doing this to everybody. And then you contrast that with an American clip, Marco Rubio, essentially saying, hey, look, this is a pause for 90 days. There is billions and billions of dollars that are not going to where it needs to be going. What did he say? 12, 13% they reckon is the trickle down to the actually
10 to 13% actually gets to where it's meant to go. And the rest
intended
of it
recipient.
tends to circle back like the garbage gyre in the middle of the Pacific. Circle back into the Democrat Party apparatchiks. I've noticed that there's a few more clips from Fox on the news lately. Have you noticed that? Used to
It
be
was.
all CNN. Now
I
it's a bit of
just
Fox.
avoid it. I just avoid it. I just.
Well,
I,
that's
oh.
you can't really do that and run a show called Media Matters.
I
Just saying.
know. I know. Well, I just.
You've got to take your medicine.
Yeah, but Marty, I have to take blood pressure medicine. It's just not good for my old menopausal health, to be brutally honest with you. But you're right. And why that's the thing that annoys me is that they have this entire clip. You have Melissa Stokes sitting there and say, oh, these
Yeah.
poor people, they're
And you've
not
got
getting this. Where was that? Just that Rubio clip
you've got
saying.
that Biden lady who was the director of USAID telling that heart-rending story about children waiting in the sun for their TB medication. And three got it, and they had to say to the rest, you've got to go home. Now, in his book, How to Spend, gosh, I can't, $60 billion or something like that, Bjorn Lomborg looked at where the best place for the most effect you could spend the UN's budget. And the number one thing was in treating TB. So suddenly they've had a come to Jesus moment, and they know that's what they zero in on. But that's not what they have been zeroing in on.
No.
Yes.
And it's good that there is going to be a review, and I think
Of
and
course, you'd be
sunlight,
hopeful.
yeah, well,
You say what?
sunlight is the best disinfectant, and it allows people to actually see what's going on and great and get an improvement. Meanwhile, back here, we've dropped another place in the trust rankings. I mean, it was only a few years ago that we were number one. We were number one in the world. We've now dropped off the podium. We're number four. And part of that is the lack of transparency. And it is. It's we see it. I mean, this is part of the reason we exist, is because no one else was talking about it. No one was. There were so few out there that were saying anything in this country that additional support is needed. There's now more and more of us. Telling the truth. I look at the. Did you see actually, like even the Māori world, right? There is some really brave voices in the Māori world who are sort of calling out things for they say. Lee Taitua, we've spoken to him, even Bishop Tāmaki from his perspective. Karina Shields is a complete warrior. The Landy sisters in terms of all things protecting women's rights, gender. And then this Mātua Kahurangi, who is a new voice on X, they're now going for him, claiming that he's sort of AI on a bot, but he's a Māori guy who's saying, hey,
Yeah.
no, he's that group, I think, that would have been, it's like that unspoken group at the signing of Treaty of Waitangi, like Māori who actually wanted the treaty, because all of a sudden, the first time in their lives, they actually get rights and
Yeah.
privileges that they've never had.
And
It's crazy.
it's important that well, people like us get together because they're going to be framed as anti-Māori. And what they are is profoundly pro-Māori because there's a lot of graft and corruption in farming and corporations. And I know this from people who chair farming and corporations, Māori farming and corporations, who've been in the police, say, there's so much corruption, boy. It's unbelievable. It just never gets reported. And it's a drain. And it comes at a terrible opportunity cost. They could be sending more promising young Maori off to study at Yale, like Mātua Jones did.
Imagine if there was a USAID type declaration for 90 days where you got people in to do a full investigation of Māori and corporations and trusts.
Well, I mean, I remember seeing, and I won't single them out, but an iwi report. I was looking at an annual report, and this was back in sort of 2008, 2010. And they actually printed this. It was on the report. They had a SWOT analysis. And one of the threats was government demands more accountability for spending. It's been a way of busking almost, like, how sometimes you get those horrible stories about Indian mothers who'll blind their children so they get more sympathy and more money. Sometimes I think Māori leaders are a bit like that with Māori youth. They
Well,
keep tolerating shit academic outcomes because that means that they can say, look at what you're doing to these people now. Give me some money.
Yeah, but the thing is that we all know this. This is Marxism 101. I mean, victimhood in critical Marxist theory pays better than excellence. It's as simple as that. It's a very, very simple. It's easier to create lots of little urns than it is, EARN, by the way, urns, than what it is to actually take those young people and empower them through meritocracy to actually stand on their own two feet and do greater things. Now, there are some people out there who are promoting Māori exceptionalism and who are wanting to do that, and Tepene is straight off the list. I drove past it coming home on the weekend, and what Nathan Drury and his wife are doing, and listen to the interview I did last year on that, is incredible. They understand the psychology of how to make exceptional young Māori leaders and have them succeed. And we know that's out there. I mean, you know Pem Bird, and he worked in that space for decades and decades. Now all of a sudden it seems to be the way that you become you lead or exceptional in anything is crying for whatever intersectional or racial victimhood status that you can achieve on the totem of oppression in order to get somebody to open up their wallets to give you money. Now, in the United States, that's snapping shut.
Well, there's that saying, it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. And I think, again, we've got to go back to some of our fundamental principles that we've been operating on for years, that inequality is bad as one. I want to see more inequality. I want to see schools going, we're gonna manage ourselves such that people are gonna say, what the hell is going on at that school? Kids are slim, they're fit, they're getting high school with an amazing reading, maths. At the moment, I mean, I've told this anecdote before. I saw a note come home with the kids. We're doing this running this trial program with Massey University, and it's maths, and it was pretty non-specific, but I went and looked it up, and the page opened, and right at the top, it's got equity. And then it's got all this stuff. Oh, maths is a major driver of inequity because some kids are good at maths and some kids are not so good at maths and inequity. And so if you get the kids who are good at maths to teach the kids who aren't good at maths, then they're more the same in equity. I told a mother about that because she was saying, oh, my son's coming home and he wants to do harder maths, but they won't give it to him. I said, have a look at that. That's what they're doing. They're saying that that's what they're doing. She was horrified.
So if you want, did you catch my interview with Elizabeth Rata on last week's 360?
I caught a bit of it, but I didn't finish it. But I mean, I always enjoy hearing Elizabeth Rata. She's so
So one
measured.
of the thing that really stood out for me, we covered a lot of ground in 25 odd minutes, but the thing that stood out for me was, as she said, around challenging thought and the mind, and that it must be difficult and challenging in order for young minds to learn. It needs to be tested and probed. And it's actually, the mind is a muscle. And if you're not exercising it, you're not improving it. And then from that, I asked around in terms of discussion, dialogue, and free speech within the educational environment. She said, yes, but you've got to have the learning there first, so they have the ability to be able to engage in that conversation as part of the cycle of growing that muscle. How often have we seen those that obviously were pretty flabby all the way through high school, and they've come out into the real world and pretty flabby through university by the look of it as well, and they've landed in New Zealand's media? There's one or two of those floating around, isn't
Maybe me.
there? Martin, no.
There is a phenomena that I heard about that I thought really, I listened to it and I thought that is me. Kids who are naturally bright can kind of just cruise through primary school, especially. They're not really challenged. And then they sort of get to a point in their education where they do need to work and that muscle hasn't been built. And of course, with mathematics particularly, The common factor in people who are good at maths is the amount of time they spend working on it. Malcolm Gladwell wrote that fantastic book Outliers, where he linked success in mathematics to people who come from rice-growing regions. And part of the reason he postulated, or said it was postulated for that, is because it's just boring, dull, repetitive, backbreaking work with incredibly long hours. And if you give a kid from one of those regions an unsolvable maths problem, they will work at it for 2 to 3 times as long before they concede defeat as someone who's, say, one of the European students or something like that, and that makes the difference. And so, yeah, we've got to have a school system that identifies talent and challenges it right the way through, right from the get-go. And there's going to be inequality from that. But
And the difficulty is that, of course, Wright is working on that curriculum at the moment, but that doesn't help you or I and our children. So, I mean, your children are going through primary and high schooling at the moment. Mine, I've got one left in year 13. And fortunately, I don't know, I mean, NCEA, I mean, I know your oldest daughter's not quite there yet, but NCEA, what amazes me is that the teachers, as well as the kids, the whole focus is how to manipulate, do the least amount of work to manipulate the maximum number of credits in order to get to the promised land, which is an acceptance as a university, if that's what it is that you're after. And it's not necessarily about putting in the hard graft and the work, knowing that you have to learn this much. On the hope that that only this much is going to get tested for an exam, but you don't know what portion, so you've got to learn it all, and you've got basically 3 hours to make or break you. Well, that puts your feet on the fire, and I understand that that is really difficult for some kids, and you need to maneuver around that, but it forces you to actually, as you say, learn and put the hard yards in. If you don't put the hard yards in studying, you're going to come a cropper when that
well,
moment of
also as
truth
parents,
comes.
don't leave it to the schools.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
my 8-year-old daughter does 4 hours of jiu-jitsu a week. My 9-year-old son does 6 hours of martial arts. He's reading books with me at night about Japanese samurai. My eldest daughter is starting to read Emily Bronte, and I'm trying to get her onto some Dostoevsky, that's my responsibility to. So what they do at school almost becomes incidental. I mean, I encourage them to aim to be as good as they can, and but yeah, the real challenge is, well, how do you get kids to read for pleasure? How do you make sure that they're spending the requisite amount of time that they need to on maths to crack it, and that they never miss anything and get left behind? And yeah, I think parents, yeah, it's really important to maintain that it is your responsibility.
It's funny, for the longest time, and I don't know whether you had this with your kids, but I know that when our two went to primary school, it was kind of like, woohoo, the thought of actually having some free time because you were with them so often and doing so much work when they were younger. And then I very, very quickly learnt with number one that the state-funded babysitting service was really not up to snuff. And that, I got a very, very, very quickly as I realised that, okay, I'm going to have to do all this stuff outside. And it is hard, isn't it? It's hard for parents. And I just, so there was another story. It's really big circulating down here. You possibly haven't seen it, but there may be similar things in your area. There's a great issue at the moment around school bus services. Have you seen this for the new year, kids going back to school? And so here we've got services both going north and south, well, north, central and north. So Napier Taupo heading north up on the Gisborne Road, where they cut these bus services. And if you've got kids that were going into town, and I mean, these are long days for some of these kids. They're coming in from
Oh.
Pepehui, up towards Tutera, taking the bus into town. And if you're not going to the closest state school, they're not going to fund the bus. Now, there is a bus that's going up. They've got kids who are going to a school. They're in a full immersion Māori program at that school. So there's a special interest. They're claiming that there is a girls' school, which is the Catholic girls' school, which is closer, forgetting that there is actually an entrance criteria. You can't just waltz into a Catholic school. I mean, if you're a non-preferential placement, there is you have to actually go through a process having two boys at Catholic school and being non-pref. And then there's another co-ed school, which is literally within a few hundred meters of the distance on the Google to where these people, these kids live. Like it's within a gnat's fart. And they're slipping a school bus service. The fathers had to teach these kids how to hitchhike into school. And then there's another mum up at Te Pāhui who's actually looking at homeschooling because she can't get her child down to the school that she was at. Call me cynical, Marty. Is this just a blind spot from Erica Stanford, who's just looking at numbers and she's saying, no, I need to put a hard line in the sand? Or are these people working within the ministry who don't actually like what's going on at the moment and thought, we've been ignoring this under the last lot, but let's actually enforce this under the new lot. We can go back to the minister and say, oh, we've saved $1 million or $500,000 by cutting the bus services to these
Yeah.
areas. She's like, oh, I can take that back to Nikki and go, look, Nikki, look what I've done.
It's just a trick every time, isn't it? Oh, the TB medicine won't get there. Oh, the payments to unlucky parents who've got high needs children who were getting some government assistance, we're going to cut that. The places where if you asked people who do pay tax, would you be happy with your tax going there? A large proportion of them would say, hell yes, that's what it's for. But they always highlight that. They never highlight the rebrandings or the bullshit.
Well, it is that ridiculous bureaucracy, which sort of brings us full circle with USAID and but what goes on here. And Cyclone Gabrielle is okay. So Friday is the 2 year anniversary since Cyclone Gabrielle and
Wow.
Valentine. Yeah,
That went
Valentine's Day.
fast.
Yeah. And after Cyclone Gabrielle, I had an issue getting youngest son to school, this because both boys went to school in Hastings, and at that time they were at different schools. And I had the bureaucracy in terms of getting bus services to get my son across to Hastings to go to school. I mean, it was an absolute nightmare, and it was so bad in the end. And I mean, Martin knows me well. I can be a dog with a bone when I have an issue. And I was calling meetings left, right, and centre, doing all of the stuff to try and make things to get a solution. Didn't happen. So in the end, I was like, fine, you discussed it with my son, took him out of one school. The following term, he started at a school to get the solution. Best thing that I ever did. Best thing ever. Happier son, better results. And I've saved myself a massive amount of money. So it just goes to prove that very expensive state integrated schools aren't always the way to go. I digress. You look at where things sort of are heading with this overwrought bureaucracy. This is what DOGE is meant to do. Do you think we need a New Zealand version of the DOGE to go over everything here and just say, guys, this has got to go? Or we don't need this anymore. Let's improve this. Let's get back to people and less about bullshit.
Yes. Yeah, we do. But I think getting back to what I was saying before about the need for consolations for people spat out of the system, I think we've got to put one of those together. And I've said before, I think what that looks like is and this is where AI can be profitably used.
Utilize, yeah.
Yeah. You have a landscape architecture design of New Zealand's countryside. You work out what you can do with whatever trees you need to chop out and how you could use them. You work out what roles there are in there. You use what I call a trellis economy. So you go, okay, within that plan, if we're going to do this and execute, so we've got the landscape architecture, goes around, okay, we're going to enlarge that wetland and protect it. We're going to cut out those wilding pines. You've got roles that are going to be like people who are working are going to need food and they're going to need accommodation built. And you could do other things like combine it with drug treatment programs. You can get some people who might be in the justice system doing that, but doing something that has a worthwhile outcome.
Like they
And
do in
so
El
you could
Salvador.
say to your public servants, okay, there's roles within this to manage that. And so at least for all the money that we're spending in 10 years, New Zealand's one of the most beautiful places on the planet because we've engineered these beautiful natural environments. Our oceans are teeming with life because our rivers are healthy and the quality of the water going out to the sea is high. So yeah, you can do that efficiency, but you've got to think of it as a cycle. And you've got to look at these things as cycles in an enlightened way. And I think, yeah, if people are thinking about things in a punishing way, the solutions are never as good. And I'll say this actually, because I feel moved to say it, the how glibly people are saying, oh, we're going to shift some of these illegal aliens into the prison systems of El Salvador. That's horrifying. You know, I mean, much as El Salvador's now got the lowest murder rate in the world, and that's great because they've just taken all these criminals and put them somewhere. The suffering involved in that, even if people deserve it, is not good for a society to impose on people. And so yeah, if you can come at things with compassion, as I said, rather than take your pictures, you know, if you can come at it from the point of view of it's going to be hard for you, gang member, when you hold your first granddaughter, because that joy you're going to feel and that love is going to be polluted by your memory of all the horrible, ugly things you've done to women during your career as a scumbag. So you know, it's a subtle but important distinction in the way you might approach things, I think.
It is indeed. It is indeed. Look, time has run away. Now, thank you. We did get some feedback, so thank you very much for that feedback. And there was something in there that we're going to look into. We only didn't really get a chance to dive into it yet, but keep those ideas coming. So if there's anything that you want to see or have Marty and I take a look at, the earlier
If
you
you're
can
reading
get
a
it,
farming magazine or something that we might not see, a plastics injection molding industry,
Yes,
yeah, let's
exactly.
spread our net a bit more widely.
Exactly. So definitely send that into inbox@realitycheck.radio or 2057 is the text. So if you flick that over to us, or actually, if you want to find Marty and I on X, so if you're on X and there's already actually a few people doing that, thanks, Mark, and you want to tag Marty and I into something to have a look at that we may not have seen, Marty is at Marty Ozone on X and I'm at Mac Buskey, so Buskey. If you find us, that is actually a direct place that you can get hold of us as well.
Yeah, I'm spending
Flick is like,
far too much time on X, so.
yeah, I'm still very voyeuristic, but I have been posting and reposting a few things. I've only had my X membership since 2010. It's taken me 15 years to
Yeah,
be active.
I've only rejoined for less than a year, but I'm finding it quite a good way to feed into the discussion, and also, as I've said, a far superior source of information about what's going on in the world than the media.
Yeah. So do feel free to flick us the stuff there, and we can and take a look at it. You know, we want to. There isn't stuff that we see all the time, and as I said to you before, I mean, there are some things I just literally can't stomach, so I avoid like the plague. But I really should be aware of. So
In terms of what?
In terms of consuming things like Socialism at Six, which just is, I mean, Marty, I'm trying to watch my Chardonnay consumption here. I used to be that two bottle of a night person. I do not want to be that person anymore. You've got to look after yourself. So that's why we distill things down into the daily brief, distill things
Yeah,
down
check
into
out the
the
Daily Brief.
RCR
It is.
bites.
Yeah, they've asked me to do Mondays. We're going to sort of share segments between the hosts. So it's a nice, dense
And
bit of
knowing you as I do, Martin, you respond very well to a deadline. So I can't wait for
pressure makes
Mondays
diamonds,
now.
Bucky. Pressure makes
Exactly,
diamonds.
exactly. So on that note, my hunka spunk diamond in the rough, as it were, you're not going to live that comment down. Thank you so much, the person that sent it in. That was gold. I'm
I
going to
do
mine that
appreciate
for a week. This has been another episode of Media Matters. You're here with RCR Talk. We will do it all again next week. Take care. Thank you, Marty.
Thank you, Marie. Have a great week, everyone.